Chapter 66. And blessing, but this evening, all were one for Deronda. The chant of the Chazarus reader's grand wide-ranging voice with its passage from monotony to sudden cries, the outburst of sweet boys' voices from the little choir, the devotional swaying of men's bodies backward and forward, the very commonness of the building and shabbiness of the scene where a national faith, which had penetrated the thinking of half the world, and molded the splendid forms of that world's religion, was finding a remote, obscure echo, all were blent for him as one expression of a binding history, tragic and yet glorious. He wondered at the strength of his own feeling. It seemed beyond the occasion, what one might imagine to be a divine influx in the darkness, before there was any vision to interpret. The whole scene was a coherent strain, its burden a passionate regret, which, if he had known the liturgy for the day of reconciliation, he might have clad in its authentic burden, happy he I which saw all these things, but verily to hear only of them afflicts our soul. Happy he I that saw our temple and the joy of our congregation, but verily to hear only of them afflicts our soul. Happy he I that saw the fingers, when tuning every kind of song, but verily to hear only of them afflicts our soul. But with the cessation of the devotional sounds, and the movement of many indifferent faces, and vulgar figures before him, there darted into his mind the frigid idea that he had probably been alone in his feeling, and perhaps the only person in the congregation for whom the service was more than a dull routine. There was just time for this chilling thought, before he had bowed to his civil neighbor, and was moving away with the rest, when he felt a hand on his arm, and turning with the rather unpleasant sensation which this abrupt sort of claim is apt to bring, he saw close to him the white-bearded face of that neighbor, who said to him in German, "Excuse me, young gentleman, allow me, what is your parentage, your mother's family, her maiden name?" Deronda had a strongly resistant feeling. He was inclined to shake off hastily the touch on his arm, but he managed to slip it away and said coldly, "I am an Englishman." The questioner looked at him dubiously still for an instant, then just lifted his hat and turned away. Whether under a sense of having made a mistake, or of having been repulsed, Deronda was uncertain. In his walk back to the hotel he tried to still any uneasiness on the subject by reflecting that he could not have acted differently. How could he say that he did not know the name of his mother's family to that total stranger, who indeed had taken an unwarrantable liberty in the abruptness of his question, dictated probably by some fancy of likeness such as often occurs without real significance. The incident, he said to himself, was trivial, but whatever import it might have, his inward shrinking on the occasion was too strong for him to be sorry that he had cut it short. It was a reason, however, for his not mentioning the synagogue to the Malingers, in addition to his usual inclination to reticence on anything that the baronet would have been likely to call quixotic enthusiasm. Hardly any man could be more good-natured than Sir Hugo. Indeed, in his kindliness, especially to women, he did actions which others would have called romantic, but he never took a romantic view of them, and in general smiled at the introduction of motives on a grand scale, or of reasons that lay very far off. This was the point of strongest difference between him and Deronda, who rarely ate at breakfast without some silent discursive flight after grounds for filling up his day according to the practice of his contemporaries. This halt at Frankfurt was taken on their way home, and its impressions were kept the more actively vibrating in him by the duty of caring for Mira's welfare. That question about his parentage, which if he had not both inwardly and outwardly shaken it off as trivial, would have seemed a threat rather than a promise of revelation, and reinforced his anxiety as to the effect of finding Mira's relatives, and his resolve to proceed with caution. If he made any unpleasant discovery, was he bound to a disclosure that might cast a new net of trouble around her? He had written to Mrs. Merrick to announce his visit at 4 o'clock, and he found Mira seated at work with only Mrs. Merrick and Mab, the open piano, and all the glorious company of engravings. the dainty neatness of her hair and dress, the glow of tranquil happiness in a face, where a painter need have changed nothing, if he had wanted to put it in front of the host singing peace on earth and goodwill to men, made a contrast to his first vision of her that was delightful to Deronda's eyes. Mira herself was thinking of it, and immediately on their greeting said, "See how different I am from the miserable creature by the river. All because you found me, and brought me to the very best. It was my good chance to find you," said Deronda. Any other man would have been glad to do what I did. That is not the right way to be thinking about it," said Mira, shaking her head with decisive gravity. "I think of what really was. It was you, and not another, who found me, and were good to me." "I agree with Mira," said Mrs. Merrick. "Saint anybody is a bad saint to pray to. Besides, anybody could not have brought me to you," said Mira, smiling at Mrs. Merrick. "And I would rather be with you than with anyone else in the world except my mother. I wonder if ever a poor little bird, that was lost, and could not fly, was taken and put into a warm nest, where was a mother and sisters who took to it, so that everything came naturally, as if it had been always there. I hardly thought before, that the world could ever be as happy, and without fear as it is to me now." She looked meditative a moment, and then said, "Sometimes I am a little afraid." "What is it you are afraid of?" said Deronda with anxiety. "That when I am turning at the corner of a street I may meet my father. It seems dreadful that I should be afraid of meeting him." "That is my only sorrow," said Mira, plaintively. "It is surely not very probable," said Deronda, wishing that it were less so. "Then, not to let the opportunity escape, old it be a great grief to you now, if you were never to meet your mother?" She did not answer immediately, but meditated again, with her eyes fixed on the opposite wall. Then she turned them on Deronda and said firmly, as he had arrived at the exact truth, "I want her to know that I have always loved her, and if she is alive I want to comfort her. She may be dead. If she were, I should long to know where she was buried, and to know whether my brother lives, so that we can remember her together. But I will try not to grieve. I have thought much for so many years of her being dead, and I shall have her with me in my mind, as I have always had. We can never be really parted. I think I have never sinned against her. I have always tried not to do what would hurt her. Only, she might be sorry that I was not a good Jewess." "In what way are you not a good Jewess?" said Deronda. "I am ignorant, and we never observed the laws, but lived among Christians just as they did. But I have heard my father laugh at the strictness of the Jews about their food and all customs, and their not liking Christians. I think my mother was strict, but she could never want me not to like those who are better to me than any of my own people I have ever known. I think I could obey in other things that she wished, but not in that. It is so much easier to me to share in love than in hatred. I remember a play I read in German, since I have been here it has come into my mind, where the heroine says something like that." "Antigone," said Deronda. "Ah, you know it. But I do not believe that my mother would wish me not to love my best friends. She would be grateful to them." Here Mira had turned to Mrs. Merrick, and with a sudden lighting up of her whole countenance, she said, "Oh, if we ever do meet and know each other as we are now, so that I could tell what would comfort her, I should be so full of blessedness my soul would know no want but to love her." "God bless you, child," said Mrs. Merrick, the words escaping involuntarily from her motherly heart. But to relieve the strain of feeling she looked at Deronda and said, "It is curious that Mira, who remembers her mother so well it is as if she saw her, cannot recall her brother the least bit except the feeling of having been carried by him when she was tired, and of his being near her when she was in her mother's lap. It must be that he was rarely at home. He was already grown up. It is a pity her brother should be quite a stranger to her." "He is good. I feel sure Ezra is good," said Mira, eagerly. "He loved my mother, he would take care of her. I remember more of him than that. I remember my mother's voice once calling, 'Ezra.' apostrophe apostrophe and then is answering from a distance mother. Apostrophe Mira had changed her voice a little in each of these words, and had given them a loving intonation, and then he came close to us. I feel sure he is good. I have always taken comfort from that. It was impossible to answer this either with agreement or doubt. Mrs. Merrick and Deronda exchanged a quick glance. About this brother she felt as painfully dubious as he did. But Mira went on, absorbed in her memories, is it not wonderful how I remember the voices better than anything else? I think they must go deeper into us than other things. I have often fancied heaven might be made of voices. Like your singing, yes, said Mab, who had hitherto kept a modest silence, and now spoke bashfully, as was her wont in the presence of Prince Camaralzaman. Do ask Mira to sing. Mr. Deronda has not heard her. Would it be disagreeable to you to sing now? Said Deronda, with a more deferential gentleness than he had ever been conscious of before. Oh, I shall like it, said Mira. My voice has come back a little with rest. Perhaps her ease of manner was due to something more than the simplicity of her nature. The circumstances of her life made her think of everything she did as work demanded from her, in which affectation had nothing to do, and as he had begun her work before self-consciousness was born. She immediately rose and went to the piano, a somewhat worn instrument that seemed to get the better of its infirmities under the firm touch of her small fingers as she preluded. Deronda placed himself where he could see her while she sang, and she took everything as quietly as if as he had been a child going to breakfast. Imagine her. It is always good to imagine a human creature in whom bodily loveliness seems as properly one with the entire being as the bodily loveliness of those wondrous transparent orbs of life that we find in the sea. Imagine her with her dark hair brushed from her temples, but yet showing certain tiny rings there which had cunningly found their own way back, the mass of it hanging behind just to the nape of the little neck in curly fibers, such as renew themselves at their own will after being bathed into straightness like that of water grasses. Then see the perfect cameo her profile makes, cut in a duskish shell, where by some happy fortune there pierced a gem-like darkness for the eye and eyebrow, the delicate nostrils defined enough to be ready for sensitive movements, the finished ear, the firm curves of the chin and neck, entering into the expression of a refinement which was not feebleness. She sang Beethoven's Erpida non dormi adio with a subdued but searching pathos which had that essential of perfect singing, the making one oblivious of ardor manner, and only possessing one with the song. It was the sort of voice that gives the impression of being meant like a bird's wooing for an audience near and beloved. Deronda began by looking at her, but felt himself presently covering his eyes with his hand, wanting to seclude the melody in darkness. Then he refrained from what might seem oddity, and was ready to meet the look of mute appeal which she turned toward him at the end. I think I never enjoyed a song more than that, he said, gratefully. You like my singing? I am so glad, she said, with a smile of delight. It has been a great pain to me, because it failed in what it was wanted for. But now we think I can use it to get my bread. I have really been taught well. And now I have two pupils that Miss Merrick found for me. They pay me nearly 2 crowns for their 2 lessons. I think I know some ladies who would find you many pupils after Christmas, said Deronda. Why, you would not mind singing before anyone who wished to hear you? Oh no, I want to do something to get money. I could teach reading and speaking, Mrs. Merrick thinks. But if no one would learn of me, that is difficult. Mira smiled with a touch of merriment he had not seen in her before. I dare say I should find her poor, I mean my mother. I should want to get money for her. And I cannot always live on charity, though here she turned so as to take all 3 of her companions in one glance. It is the sweetest charity in all the world. I should think you can get rich, said Deronda, smiling. Gee, great ladies will perhaps like you to teach their daughters, we shall see. But now do sing again to us. She went on willingly, singing with ready memory various things by Gordigenai and Schubert. Then, when S.E. had left the piano, Mab said, entreatingly, "Oh, Mira, if you would not mind singing the little hymn." "It is too childish," said Mira. "It is like lisping." "What is the hymn?" said Deronda. "It is the Hebrew hymn she remembers her mother singing over her when she lay in her cot," said Mrs. Merrick. "I should like very much to hear it," said Deronda, "if you think I am worthy to hear what is so sacred." "I will sing it if you like," said Mira, "but I don't sing real words, only here and there a syllable like hers, the rest is lisping. Do you know Hebrew? Because if you do, my singing will seem childish nonsense." Deronda shook his head. It will be quite good Hebrew to me." Mira crossed her little feet and hands in her easiest attitude, and then lifted up her head at an angle which seemed to be directed to some invisible face bent over her, while she sang a little hymn of quaint melancholy intervals, with syllables that really seemed childish lisping to her audience. The voice in which she gave it forth had gathered even a sweeter, more cooing tenderness than was heard in her other songs. "If I were ever to know the real words, I should still go on in my old way with them," said Mira, when S.E. had repeated the hymn several times. "Why not?" said Deronda. "The list syllables are very full of meaning." "Yes, indeed," said Mrs. Merrick. A mother hears something of a lisp in her children's talk to the very last. Their words are not just what everybody else says, though they may be spelled the same. If I were to live till my Hans got old, I should still see the boy in him. A mother's love, I often say, is like a tree that has got all the wood in it, from the very first it made. Is not that the way with friendship too?" said Deronda, smiling. "We must not let the mothers be too arrogant." The little woman shook her head over her darning. "It is easier to find an old mother than an old friend. Friendships begin with liking or gratitude roots that can be pulled up. Mother's love begins deeper down." "Like what you were saying about the influence of voices," said Deronda, looking at Mira. I don't think your hymn would have had more expression for me if I had known the words. I went to the synagogue at Frankfurt before I came home, and the service impressed me just as much as if I had followed the words perhaps more." "Oh, was it great to you? Did it go to your heart?" said Mira, eagerly. "I thought none, but our people would feel that. I thought it was all shut away like a river in a deep valley, where only heaven saw." "I mean," she hesitated, feeling that she could not disentangle her thought from its imagery. "I understand," said Deronda. "But there is not really such a separation deeper down, as Mrs. Merrick says. Our religion is chiefly a Hebrew religion, and since Jews are men, their religious feelings must have much in common with those of other men just as their poetry, though in one." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.